Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington, working on this program via remote. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan this Monday, March 7, 2022. The administrator of the contested Abyei area says pro-Sudan government militias attacked the town on Sunday.
They attacked that small village, killing five innocent people and wounding one.
And some traders in South Sudan say the government should give credit facilities to business women in the country.
They disturb us a lot. That's why you see some other women, they lose hope. If you're not strong, you lose hope.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Authorities in the Abyei administrative area say dozens of people died and many others injured over the weekend during an attack by armed militia suspected of being from the Twitch County of Warab State and Sudan. The area's chief administrator says the attackers invaded Mading Thorn village on Saturday and Sunday. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Bor.
The chief administrator of the Abyei administrative area, Kwal Dim Kwal, says gunmen suspected of coming from Warab State, Twitch County, and a group of Sudanese Masiria tribesmen invaded Mading Thorn village, 2 kilometers west of Abyei town, and killed 5 people on Saturday. He says the same armed men went on rampage the next day, killing more than 20 people in Mading Thorn village.
They attacked that small village, killing 5 innocent people and wounding one. And yesterday, they repeated the attacks, and they came in a huge number. The Mushiria came in a huge number, and they were joined by the elements of the militia of Tom Kiel, who are mostly from Twitch area, and attack again the same village, Mading Thorn. Yesterday, attack was very disastrous. About 27 youth were killed and four got wounded.
Chief Administrator Kwal condemned the attacks and says it is extremely unfortunate to see fellow South Sudanese attacking each other.
It's very unfortunate that our brothers are fighting us from the south, that is the Twitch, and the real enemy took advantage and is also attacking our people from the north, but our people are determined, they are defending their land.
The UN Security Council established the United Nations Interim Security Force for Abyei, also known as UNISFA, in June 2011. Saying it was deeply concerned by the violence, escalating tensions, and population displacement in the area. The operation was tasked with monitoring the flashpoint border between the north and the south, and to facilitate the delivery of humanitarian aids. The force was also authorized to use force in protecting civilians and humanitarian workers in Abyei. Kwal says UNESPA soldiers have since been evacuated and the force meant to replace them have yet to arrive. The Abyei area chief administrator is calling on the UN Security Council to delay the transport of UN forces during this critical security situation.
I have been appealing to New York, UN Security Headquarters, to suspend the current replacement of UNESPA till the rainy season begins. Till 1st of June. By that time, the Mushiria nomads would have left the area, and that was the right time to release the forces.
When contacted for comment, Ring Deng Ading, the information minister in Warab State, said he was busy in a meeting and could not speak. The Sudanese ambassador to South Sudan, Jamal Malik, said he needed to gather additional facts about the attacks before making a public statement.
I'm still waiting for information, okay? And when I get information, I can give you comment. I need to get information from the ground. I need to clarify with my people to get information from the ground.
The armed Masiriya tribesmen have been accused of carrying out attacks in South Sudan over the past few years. In January, the authorities in northern Bahr al-Ghazali state said they had closed the western border with Sudan indefinitely after an attack by suspected Masiriya tribesmen that left more than a dozen people dead in Awil East County of northern Bahr al-Ghazali state. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaideng in Bor.
International Women's Day, celebrated on March 8, aims to focus global attention on the state of women when it comes to gender equality, bias, stereotypes, and discrimination. Its goal is to make the world more diverse, equitably, and inclusive for them. VOA's Laura Bowman has this story.
We've heard the famous quotes, "Behind every great woman is another great woman." Investing in a woman is investing in a community. When women move forward, the world moves with them. International Women's Day on March 8th invites the world to focus on where women are and where they need to go. In the United States, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce Foundation held a virtual two-day forum to highlight International Women's Day. Paloma Adams-Allen is with USAID.
Real progress has been made in recent decades, yet women and girls continue to shoulder a profoundly disproportionate burden of the impacts of today's global challenges.
There were shout-outs for women in Ukraine, whose country is under attack by Russia. Again, USAID's Paloma Adams-Allen.
As the conflict continues to unfold, we're seeing women play a crucial role in resisting Russia's campaign of violence, responding to the urgent needs of their communities, combating disinformation, taking up arms to fight, and engaging on the diplomatic front.
Experts also noted that women around the world have carried a good bulk of the burden in responding to the global COVID-19 pandemic, as both healthcare workers and caregivers, both in the home and in the workplace. Rachel Vogelstein is with the White House Gender Policy Council.
So child care, elder care, home care too often are inaccessible and unaffordable, while at the same time, care workers scramble to care for their own families, even as they take care of others.
Meantime, women were forced out of jobs during the COVID-19 pandemic. In the U.S., more than 3 million women exited the labor market over the past 2 years, according to the U.S. Chamber of Commerce Foundation, with women's participation in the workplace lower than it's been in over 30 years. And women and girls are more likely to be killed by natural disasters as the rate and severity of climate shocks increase globally, according to USAID. Advocates for women's rights would also like to see more women in top government and political roles. U.S. Congresswoman Jennifer Gonzalez represents Puerto Rico and is the co-chair of the Congressional Women's Caucus.
We need to have more girls and women participating in civics and politics. I think even when we are almost 49% of the population, we are not equally represented in the positions of power.
Experts laud the progress women have made so far, but want to see more when it comes to gender equity, diversity, and inclusiveness. Laurel Bowman, VOA News, Washington.
Some women in South Sudan who are doing cross-border trade say businessmen face fewer challenges while importing goods from East Africa. The women say aside from being harassed by some drivers, security officers, and custom officials at border crossing points, business women have no equal access to credit facilities offered by the government and some banks in South Sudan. Sheila Pony spoke to female traders at the Nimule border crossing point and has this report for VOA from Juba.
Every day, women arrive in droves at the Nimule border crossing town on the South Sudan-Uganda border. Florence Arama, who sells herbal soap, jellies, and handmade shoes, is one of the growing number of South Sudanese women engaged in cross-border trade. Arama says she's determined to make her mark in the cross-border trade, but wants that other women. It is not an easy task.
Crossing border, if you like, I go to Uganda to bring my the materials. If you reach the crossing from here, they need some. You need to move when you have money. enough for you to travel from here and to bring your materials. And if you reach there, you buy your materials, coming back with them. If you reach the bus park, removing those things from bus park, bringing them home, that is another problem. They disturb us a lot. That's why you're seeing some other women, they lose hope. If you're not strong, you lose hope.
The South Sudan Women Entrepreneurs Association helps women navigate the complexity of cross-border trade. Finale Lams is the association's technical advisor.
Most of our women don't even know the simplified trade regimes that we are doing across the three borders. For example, any woman crossing the East African borders, the Juba, Numule border, Nadabal, Kaya, if you're carrying goods less than $2,000, you're not supposed to pay anything. The tax authorities are supposed to clear you, move with your goods.
But it is not always that simple. Arama says female traders often face complicated paperwork and challenging legal procedures as they cross the border. She says in the process, some women often have to pay bribes to border officials in order to get their goods cleared.
Like for me, they normally call me Venus Wewede. When you want to kill a South Sudanese, oh, you bring things which are not good, which are expired. If not, you bring all your product, you put it here, or unless you bring whatever, the company certificate, so that we release your things. And releasing it is not easy. They have to get something enough. But for me, we always quarrel with them. They are the pack. What I tell them is this, what you're doing is what is making women of South Sudan not to do business. Because we are still trying and we want to make our country look like in South Sudan also, there are women who can make this and there are women who can do this. You're now disappointing us.
Trader Florence Gordon in Juba says it's not a level playing field for men and women engaged in cross-border trade. She says all of the taxes and service fees that a trader must pay at border points end up eating into her profits.
The challenges we are facing as women of South Sudan are many. The city council sometimes charges us too much, but you have to pay them like the service fee. It's too much for us.
Kush Bor Maik trades arts and crafts in Tanzania, Rwanda and Burundi. Bor Maik says women have no access to loans for them to start businesses.
Women have no access to loans for them to start businesses. For example, I saved the little I get to start my business. Other countries provide loans for traders or anyone who wants to start a business for them to work.
Arama says women traders are often subjected to radical by male cross-border traders. She says South Sudanese policies and regulations should be changed to allow women traders equal access to loans and protect them from harassment at the border.
My hope for the future, I don't want this business to remain like the way it is, because these things now are making them from home. I need to get a place whereby I can sell my product, like a wholesale place, or where I open a place like a factory, or whereby I can train some other women. We are now joining this East Africa community. If they could leave us women travel, bringing our things from there without asking for us some bribes or what, to make our business move at least better than what we are doing now.
Despite the multiple obstacles in their way, South Sudanese women say they are determined to carry on with cross-border trade in order to provide their families and help their communities. For VOA News, I am Sheila Pony in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, the governor of Western Bahr al-Ghazal State says her administration has restored peace in the area. Find out how after the break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is your golden rule in life?
My golden rule is never to give up, no matter what, whether it's on family challenges, money problems, work related, I just never give up.
Golden rule. No, I don't allow men to play with my life. That is my golden rule. And I don't allow anyone to talk ill about my parents and my family.
Put God first, because in everything you need God. And as you know, the fearing of God is the beginning of knowledge.
Not to lie, I always want to base my living, everything I do, my speaking, my saying, in facts and truth.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. The UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR, is appealing for $205 million for assistance to more than 1.6 million people displaced by conflict in northern Ethiopia. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
The conflict, which began 16 months ago in northern Ethiopia's Tigray region, has spread to the neighboring Amhara and Afar regions. This has resulted in a humanitarian crisis for more than 2 million people forced to flee their homes. The UN Refugee Agency says most of the victims are displaced inside Ethiopia, while nearly 60,000 have fled to neighboring Sudan. UNHCR spokeswoman Shabia Mantu says all are in desperate need of support.
Civilians, including refugees and internally displaced people, have been displaced amid widespread reports of gender-based violence, human rights abuses, loss of shelter and access to basic services, and critical levels of food insecurity. Several camps and settlements hosting Eritrean refugees have been attacked or destroyed, further displacing tens of thousands within Ethiopia.
Ethiopia launched its military offensive in Tigray on November 4, 2020, to oust the Tigray People's Liberation Front from its northern stronghold. The UN says 40% of Tigray's population of 6 million suffers from acute hunger, with 400,000 on the verge of famine. Eritrea, which supports the government, reportedly has attacked several camps in Tigray, housing tens of thousands of Eritrean refugees. Mantu says funds from the appeal will help provide protection and humanitarian assistance to those affected by continuing violence inside Ethiopia.
At least 60,000 internally displaced households will be assisted with shelter and emergency relief items. We will establish additional protection desks, adding to the more than 60 that have already been set up, to identify people with specific needs and to refer survivors of gender-based violence to services. And we will support the reintegration of 75,000 displaced families who wish to return to their homes.
Mantu says UNHCR will provide protection and assistance to the thousands of Ethiopian refugees who have fled to eastern Sudan. Critical aid, she says, includes construction of shelters and strengthening health care and education. She says the agency will scale up psychosocial and mental health support to the severely traumatized. She adds $16 million is being set aside for any potential influx of Ethiopian refugees into neighboring Djibouti, Kenya, Somalia, and South Sudan. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Hundreds of Ghanaians are among the African students evacuated from Ukraine when Russia attacked the country. Some of them arrived back home this week. But just an hour from the border with Russia, a number of Ghanaian and other African students are still sheltering underground while waiting for a safe escape. Sinanu Todd reports from Accra.
Ghanaian students from Ukraine arrive at the Kutuka International Airport in Accra to meet their families. The students fled Ukraine at the start of the war to avoid being killed or injured. Ebenezer Kwachi Ajimai, parent of a returned student, says they are happy to welcome them back.
Extremely, extremely happy. Extremely happy. We are grateful to God for bringing them. We thank the government for bringing them. And as a parent, and I'm very sure any other parent who came to meet his or her ward shared the same sentiment with me. We are very happy that they are here with us.
Please sit.
But the journey out of Ukraine, the students say, was traumatic. In the city of Chinisi, the leadership of the National Union of Ghana Students, NUCS, mobilized 24 Ghanaians and 13 other African nationals on a bus and headed to the Romanian border. Samuel Jemeke, a fourth-year medical student and NUCS vice president, says the sound of bombs and visible smoke from neighboring cities was the trigger for them to flee.
We heard a bombing, which is a city which is 2 hours away from my city.
Ivano-Frankivsk. So we just made that decision that we're going to leave whatever it takes. So we did a necessary clearing from the school, and then we went to organize a bus. And we were ready to pay any amount the bus was going to charge us. So we just got on board, and then we gathered the people, and then we set off.
I see traffic. You guys,
at the Ukrainian border, they say there was heavy vehicular and human traffic. They had to abandon their bus and walk through the cold and dark for several hours. Jemeke says it took his team about 15 hours to cross the Ukrainian border amid competition with the locals, children and mothers for space to exit.
They were very harsh there, very harsh. I actually thought some of them were racist because they'll point at me and some of my friends, the blacks, that go back, you go back. That's the only English they can speak. You go back. Meaning, don't come near the gates, else it's going to push you. And some of my friends were actually, I wouldn't say molested, but they will pull you like this. Like maybe you've reached the gates, the tip of the gate, he's standing there. He can't push you to go back because you are going to hurt someone. So he'll pull you and push you inside.
At the Romanian border, they were welcomed by Ghanaian communities where the government of Ghana facilitated their travel back to Ghana. According to the government, there are about 1,200 Ghanaians in Ukraine, 78% of them students. On March 1st, the government had confirmed that about half of Ghanaians in Ukraine had fled to neighboring countries. Some students are still stuck in northeastern Ukraine, in the city of Sumy, which was attacked before they could flee. Sandwiched between Russian borders and war-torn cities, the students in Sumy have no route to access a safe border. In a WhatsApp chat with the public relations officer of the National Union of Ghana Students in Sumy, Benjamin Boateng said, "Right now, there is no power and no water here. We are fighting for our lives." He pleaded for the government to intervene and said they needed evacuation measures to get them to any country. Russia, Hungary, anywhere, he said. In a meeting with parents, government has assured families of people stuck in Ukraine that they will employ every diplomatic means to bring everyone to safety. Sena Anutod for VOA News, Accra, Ghana.
The government of Western Bahar al-Ghazal State says sports and cultural activities have created cohesion among different communities in the area. The governor of Western Bahar al-Ghazal State, Sarah Kleto Hassan, says her office worked with community leaders to restore security and stability across the state. Michael Atit reports for VOA from WOW.
Governor Sarah Kleto Hassan says the state security situation has improved significantly over the past 2 years compared with the previous years. Kleto attributes the improvement to collective efforts by different groups to organize social, cultural, and sports activities, which she says unites different communities. Speaking to South Sudan in Focus in her office in WOW over the weekend, Kleto said building social cohesion was her first priority 2 years ago.
There's a number of social and cultural events and also sports events that has been bringing the population together. And the purpose of all of this is for the sports for peace and running for peace and also dancing for peace. So we have seen so many progress in terms of social development.
Kleto Hassan is the only female governor of South Sudan. She was on the SPLM-IO's list of governors, which was allowed to appoint three per the revitalized peace deal. She says different ethnic communities of Wau Town and those on other parts of the state live together peacefully after being divided during the recent conflict.
When I came, I assumed office, there was, you can feel that there was some divisions, like the communities of communities of Wau, or they generally termed as Fertit, they are in one part, the communities of Luo, they're in another part, and then the communities of Dinka, they're in different parts. The neighborhoods are kind of divided unintentionally, but what we are trying is to break those barriers.
Governor Kleto says more than 30,000 internally displaced persons or IDPs left United Nations Protection of Civilian sites and have resettled in their homes. She says she appreciates international and national partners for implementing recovery programs such as rehabilitating health centers, schools, and water points.
We are seeing progress. We are seeing that people are returning to their homes. The humanitarian organizations are still helping us, and we are very grateful for that. But also the people are ready to go back to their livelihoods. Cultivation, building their homes, and there is still the need for tools for agriculture, but I see the spirit of returning and resettling.
Governor Kleto says the conflict in South Sudan affected people in many ways and may take long to recover. She encourages communities in Western Bahr el-Ghazal state to always engage in dialogue when they encounter differences.
There is trauma and there is fear, but we have seen over the past 2 years, people have started going back. Recovering from the war takes a long time, and this is what I would like to tell my people, that we should not be tempted to go back to fighting. If there is any problem, we should try to solve it in harmony, in a brotherly and sisterly way.
Welltown resident Dr. Francis Michael says sport tournaments, theater, and other social activities have helped communities in Wau recover from effects of war. He says nowadays people stay out late in Welltown.
Security-wise, there is a lot of improvement. Why saying so? Because currently in Wau, you can move freely without getting any barriers from maybe from the security personnel or any person or the criminals. And the criminals' activities has reduced.
Another Wau resident, Angelina Shama Agostino, agrees that the security situation across the state has improved since Kleto was appointed governor. Shama says many IDPs have returned to their homes and are busy farming the land or working in other businesses. Shama says the security situation in the state has improved so much, and there is a lot of movement of people during day and night. She says our government is making a lot of efforts to keep security. Shama says people move freely. Those who are engaged in farming and other activities are working well without fear. Both Michael and Shama called on the state government to continue its good work and allow citizens to access all other services. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Wau.
That's all we prepared for you this Monday. We now end the show with Mr. Nice and the song Rafiki, which means friend in Kiswahili.
Kelele za chura zimnyi mitembo kunywa maji na dua la kuku halimpati wewe utalijua jijiwe sikujua kama rafiki yangu huyu ni bonge la nyoka tena niti anayejifanya yeye mwanafundo tena anang'ata na kupuliza vuu kama panya kukua.
We have been listening to Mr. Nice and the song Rafiki. I'm John Tanz in Washington. Thanks for taking time to be with us this evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there's no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.